It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night. It is good to be back in Burlington. Good to be back indeed after a long but fun week in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We were live on Radio Row last week. We are live right now at the Shelburne Tap House, Route 7 here in Shelburne. Come on, hang out. We've got 250 Bud Light Aluminums right now. We've also got tons of Vermont craft beers. Great liquor specials and also food specials every single night, including the Montreal Steak Poutine, which I had earlier today as well. And, man, that is awesome. This is a good place. I tell you what, I had never been here before. So this is a place where you can date, you could bring a client, you could bring somebody who's interviewing for a job, you bring your parents if they're in town. This is a place where you can do a lot of things. So we appreciate the people out at the Shelburne Tap House for having us. When I say that it is good to be back in town, I really mean that, because look, I love every year going to the Super Bowl. It's my third year in a row doing it, and I find it to be one of the most exhilarating weeks for me professionally of the entire year. I just the chance to meet people and the stories that come out of it. And you know, I told the story in hour one of the huddle, and we're going to get more into this story as the week goes on, but you know, to be, you know, have former NFL quarterback Bruce Gradkowski be buying us shots on Friday night on our, you know, as the plane leave, you know, I'm leaving for the airport at 5:45. This is now midnight that Bruce Gradkowski is buying us shots. And to hear stories about John Gruden from him playing with Gruden, I mean, that kind of stuff makes going to the Super Bowl great. But when I touched down at the airport in Burlington on Saturday afternoon, man, I was pumped. I was pumped to be here. I was pumped to watch the game with you guys at McGillicuddy's. We had a blast, even though it wasn't the result that most of you wanted. But I got to watch the UVM game on Saturday right after I came back, you know, see them, you know, dominate the second half against UMBC. So it was a great week. It was a lot of fun. We learned a lot, made a lot of great contacts, a lot of great guests that we can continue to use for the future. But it is good to be back home, that much for sure. As for what's coming up on the show today, the Eagles proved something last night that I've been wanting the Patriots to prove all year. Also, the NFL, we always say it's a copycat league. It's about to become a copycat league once again. And on the Malcolm Butler situation, do the Patriots owe Butler anything because of his Super Bowl heroics in Super Bowl 49? First, the Eagles did last night what we have said teams need to do against the Patriots all the time. Rich, please don't talk into my microphone over there. We'll have to turn Rich's mic off as he makes conversation with everybody. I turned off my mic. Now that's yours. Now your mic is done. So there's that. So the Eagles, we have said all along that teams need to take chances against the Patriots. They need to be aggressive against the Patriots, and they need to not let off the gas against the Patriots. Why? Because the Patriots feed on your being scared. They feed on your getting too conservative, and they prey on that fear that not only do they know they're going to win, but you know that they are going to win. And the Eagles yesterday, they took major gambles. Make no mistake, they took major gambles. And if the Eagles had lost, or if these gambles hadn't worked, trust me, we would have been sitting here today singing a very different tune, and we would have been saying the Eagles were stupid. 802-655-6672, if you want to get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. You can also call in. We got Aaron back in the studio. Think about how ludicrous some of the things that the Patriots had done to them by the Eagles last night were. Think about this. The Eagles go for it with 5.5 minutes to play inside their own territory. Inside their own territory, not even up by more than one full score. Who does that? Now, if it doesn't work, we're sitting here crushing Doug Peterson, and it very well might be the major reason why the Eagles lose last night. But instead, They keep their foot on the gas. They stay relentless because they know that they have to do that in order to beat the Patriots. And even though it was a Patriot team that wasn't at their best, look at what happened last year. Atlanta gets up 28-3, and they pull back the reins. They dial back what had gotten them that lead. Look at Jacksonville in the AFC Championship. All the criticism coming about how they got too complacent in the fourth quarter. They played scared. They played not to lose rather than to win. I mean, look, even in college football this year, what did we see? Georgia's up against Alabama, and they dial it back, and there's Alabama coming back to win the title. And go back even before that. Oklahoma has the Heisman Trophy winner in Baker Mayfield. Third down and three, and they run it. They don't trust Baker Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner, a potential first-round draft pick, a probable first-round draft pick. They didn't trust him to go and make the play. Oftentimes, we see this. Teams play afraid. They play not to lose. And Doug Peterson yesterday, he called that game with guts. He called it with conviction. And because it worked, we're calling him a genius. And trust me, again, if it didn't work, we'd be sitting here crushing him. They went for it on fourth and one. The touchdown pass that Nick Foles catches, fourth and one. If that didn't work, what would we be saying today? Oh, you left points on the board. You left 3 points on the board right before halftime. Why? If Nick Foles drops that pass in the way that Tom Brady does, what are we saying? Why are you throwing it to a quarterback? We would have every reason to crush Doug Peterson, but today we're singing his praises because it worked. And he did what he felt the Eagles needed to do and what he needed to do as a play caller to always be aggressive. And those sentiments were echoed by Drew Bledsoe. Former Patriot Drew Bledsoe was on Golic and Wingo today, and he spoke about that attitude from Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles.
You look at what the Patriots do to teams, they get conservative. All you have to do is look at last year's Super Bowl. You look at the AFC Championship game. The minute teams get conservative against the Patriots, they're dead because the Patriots are they're just going to keep coming at you. But in order to beat the Patriots, and it was, again, proved last night, you have to stay aggressive the entire game.
You have to stay aggressive the entire game. And Doug Peterson did that. And he knew that he had to. And it's refreshing to see a coach who believes in his guys and believes in his game plan. Look, and he knows his defense wasn't stopping Tom Brady. 600 yards of total offense. He knew that his play calling and his offense against that Patriots defense was a far better matchup for him, far more favorable than trusting his defense to stop Tom Brady. Look, I'm no Patriot fan. I was with you guys. I was rooting for the Patriots. It's good for, my girlfriend's a Patriot fan. Most of our listeners are Patriot fans, especially in this matchup. Most of them are Patriots fans. It's good for business if the Patriots win because we're a Patriot station, but I am no Patriot fan. But it was refreshing to see somebody have the guts to go after it and have the guts to stay after it and have the guts to not be intimidated and have the guts that if it didn't work, to know that he was going to fall on the sword, that he was going to be the reason maybe that the Eagles lost. Doug Peterson, kudos to you. You have done what we have all said all along, but that not many people have the guts to do. You went for it, and you went for it consistently, and you were rewarded for it. It's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, live at the Shelburne Tap House. You can get in 802-655-6672. We'll be here tonight until 7 o'clock, so another 45 minutes or so. We got great food. The Montreal Steak Poutine is on special tonight, $5 off that. Wine Down Wednesdays go on here, 250 Bud Light Aluminums here as well. And I see we've got a large work contingent over here, and they're hitting the 250 Bud Light Aluminums as well. So Tom Brady reportedly didn't shake hands with Nick Foles after the game. And it's not even really reported at this point because it's confirmed. Nick Foles says that Tom Brady did not speak to him after the game. As far as Do I think that's a big deal? The answer is yes. I do think that it is unsportsmanlike for Tom Brady to walk off the field and pout. I get it. It's emotional. He's sad. He's upset. You pour your heart and soul into this. We've seen that in Tom versus Time, how much it means to him. I get it. And I wouldn't be happy either. But Tom Brady, I think, owes it as whatever you think he owes. He owes it as a competitor. He owes it as a face of the league. He owes it as a role model to kids. Whatever it is, I think he owes it to go shake Nick Foles' hands. Russell Wilson shook his hand when losing to Tom Brady. Matt Ryan shook his hand when losing to Tom Brady. I think this is a big deal. I think it's a poor look for Brady, and I think it's a poor reflection on a guy who is generally a pretty good guy. That said, what I want is I want there to be consistent treatment of athletes and teams. I want it to be consistent. People have selective problems with acts like this. Derek in Middlebury goes, Brady, Major League Baseball doesn't shake hands after playoff games. You are right. They do not. But it is established that after the game in the NFL, you meet at midfield and the quarterbacks shake hands and head coaches shake hands and offensive linemen shake hands with defensive linemen and guys who are old college teammates go find each other. That is established practice in the NFL. If you don't like it, then you have a much bigger problem than just Tom Brady right now. But I just want it to be consistent. LeBron James in whatever it was, 07, 08, right before he left the Cavaliers, when they lose in Boston, he sulks off the court. And people still to this day crush him for that. If you're going to crush LeBron for that, then you better be crushing Brady today. You can't just say, oh, I like Brady, so that's okay. I'm tired of Brady just getting the benefit of the doubt and the free pass and us just saying, oh, Tom hates to lose. Oh, Tom's a competitor. Oh, did you see how much it meant to him? He was fiery. He couldn't even find the words. Don't make excuses for it. Be consistent with your thinking on it. Everybody hates to lose, and they show it in different ways. Do you remember 2 years ago when Cam Newton lost to the Denver Broncos? He went to the media, he went to the podium, and he was very, very sulky. He was almost going to cry. He walked off. And what did people say? They said, poor sport. Answer the questions. Poor sport. Be a role model. You win the MVP of the league, and you can dab up when everything's good, but you can't answer the tough questions when everything's going bad. Be consistent. Okay? People crushed Cam Newton for that episode. Why is Tom Brady not getting the same negative treatment now? Look, if it doesn't bother you, then fine. But it shouldn't bother you in every case then. I happen to not like it. I think that's poor reflections on athletes who don't do that. Tom Brady doesn't do it, I don't like it. LeBron doesn't do it, I don't like it. Heck, even my Seahawks lose to the Patriots in Super Bowl 49, and what did they do? Last play of the game, there's Michael Bennett and some defensive linemen throwing some cheap shots after the game. And I didn't like that. And all I heard about from Patriot fans is how classless the Seahawks were. Hey, accept losing. Learn how to lose. Lose with style. Oh, what a fall from grace. Oh, they can run their mouths. You mad, bro, when they're winning. But you can't hack it in the end when you're losing. And look, that's fine. But if you're going to say that to me then you better be holding yourself accountable now for what Brady's doing. If it's never going to matter to you, then it better always never matter to you. The bad boy Pistons, when they got dethroned by was the Michael Jordan-led Bulls for the first time, they walked off the court. They walked off the court before the game was even over because they didn't want to see the end of it. They were fiery and competitive and didn't want to lose. But I remember hearing about and watching in the Bad Boy Pistons 30 for 30 about how they were seen as sulkers and sourpusses, and they didn't know how to lose, and they weren't graceful in defeat. Tom Brady wasn't graceful in defeat last night. If you're a Patriot fan, don't justify it. Yeah, he is a generally good guy. He is what we think, a good father and a good husband and a good role model and a great player. He is generally a likable guy. Last night was not a likable act. And don't justify it. If you're blowing it off for Brady, but holding it against LeBron from a decade ago, then you need to come to a middle ground and decide, okay, is this actually a big deal? And if it is, then it's not exclusive to anybody. It's a poor look for everybody who does this. Because I had to field the day after the Seahawks lost to the Super Bowl. I had to hear, your team's a bunch of punks, Brady, pushing and shoving. And you know what? I didn't like that look. But if I had said, man, they just hate to lose. They just hate to lose. You wouldn't have let that fly. You can't let it fly for Brady. And I was rooting for the Patriots. And I like Brady. But I don't agree with that. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Unnamed texter comes in and goes, so why not rip Bill Belichick for calling plays that backfire, benching a defensive starter, kickoff reverse with a minute left, throwing to Tom Brady? Come on. So that was in reference to earlier in the segment when I praised Doug Peterson. Well, number one, Bill Belichick is not the play caller for the Patriots on offense. He's not the play caller. Now, does he have input? I'm sure he does. But Josh McDaniels is the play caller for the New England Patriots. So if you have a problem with that, it's a problem with McDaniels and not Belichick himself. The kickoff reverse, that's a special teams call. Also not Belichick. So Belichick will, you know, the head coach often takes some of the credit from coordinators and also takes a lot of the blame from coordinators as well. The thing that was the issue that I had with the Patriots was going for it on fourth down early in the game in first quarter, and I have to look at the rest of the play, but Brady throwing a 30-yard pass to a double-covered Gronk I don't think is the best read on fourth and one. I bet somewhere in that play there was a better read, so I'd blame Brady on that rather than McDaniels. The pass to Tom Brady, here's why I didn't have a problem with that. Now, Brady drops the pass. It's third down and five at this point, and number one, that play has worked to perfection for the Patriots. They ran it against the Eagles, the same Eagles in 2015. Slight variation, but they ran it to perfection, and Brady had a catch that went for 25, 30 yards. So that play has been run. Brady was 2 for 2 on catches in his career, so it's not an issue of can Brady not catch. That's another reason I'm okay with it. And two, they went for it on fourth down and five after. So they knew that they were going with two, they were going with two plays. It wasn't like that play prohibited them from, you know, that play forced them to punt. They were going for it anyways. They said, we'll take a shot here because we trust ourselves on fourth down. And it didn't end up working, but I think about it like pitching. Now, you don't like to throw, you know, 3-2, you know, 2-2 changeups. But I would throw a 2-2 changeup if I know that if it went to 3-2, you know, I was still okay and confident in something else. That's kind of how I look at that. That's kind of how I liken it to baseball. I don't like to throw 2-2 changeups, but if I'm okay going to ball three because I know I have something else that I can go to on 3-2, then it's okay to take that chance in the 2-2 count. Again, Champlain Valley Game Night here, live from the Shelburne Tap House. Come hang out, Route 7, 250 Bud Light Aluminums. Remember, Wednesday we'll be out at the City Sports Grill. We'll have Huddle Trivia. That will be a blast as also. I missed it last week, so I'm excited to get back to it. When we come back, the Patriots defense really struggled yesterday. Let's not act like this is a big surprise. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, back once again from the Shelburne Tap House right here on Shelburne Road, Route 7. Come hang out here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and always streaming on the 101.3 ESPN app. We go up until 7 o'clock today. We got Aaron back in the studio. Aaron, you came and hung out with us yesterday at McGillicuddy's. That was the first time you've come and hung out with us, so what'd you think?
I had a lot of fun. Yeah, it was great. I got
you
to
got a,
got,
You got to bring the fam next time. Were you too cool to roll with your parents? Is that how this goes now?
My mom told me she was tired. I offered because she always wants to meet you guys. So I offered. She said she told me she was tired. Sophia wanted to come too. Yeah. So she, well, I'm
now,
actually
the other.
I'm bringing her on trivia. Bringing her to trivia on Wednesday.
Nice. So trivia on Wednesday. That'll be at the City Sports Grill. So that'll be fun. The other thing, you really did make a bad mistake though yesterday.
What was it?
Well, you're 19 years old. You're going to learn this. And everyone who's listening knows what I'm about to say. It is a mistake. You got there, and the boss was there. The big boss was there. And he offered to buy food for everybody. And you said, no, you weren't hungry. You were being nice. You didn't want to run up the bill on him. And then as soon as he left, you ordered food. When the boss offers to buy you food and pay for it, you accept. Always. Even if you're not hungry, take leftovers. Because the boss... You know, everyone knows this boss is offering to buy food. That doesn't always happen. You got to take him up on that.
You're right.
So you did miss out there. We had a great time at McGillicuddy's. So a lot of fun for the Super Bowl, despite the result, if you are a Patriot fan. You know, one thing I keep hearing today is, the defense lost the game for the Patriots. And while maybe that's true on some levels, we can't act like this is a surprise. Don't act like... The Patriots' performance last night was a surprise. Now, the only thing that was different was that usually the Patriots bend but don't break. And they had turned into, you know, one of the fewest points allowed per game teams in the league. But they played a dynamic offense yesterday. When they played dynamic offenses this season, that defense got shredded. So don't confuse things. The defense generally kept teams out of the end zone, but when they were challenged with a good offense, they struggled. Remember back in week one, Alex Smith and Kareem Hunt at Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce? At that point, Kansas City, for the first month of the season, looked like a Super Bowl favorite in their own right. They were that Patriot defense got shredded at full strength with Dante Hightower, shredded by Alex Smith in Kansas City. They got shredded weeks later by Deshaun Watson, who was making, you know, one of the first three starts of his NFL career. And that game was at home. And the Pats were fortunate to win that game. I want to say it was 26-23. They barely beat rookie-led Deshaun Watson. DeAndre Hopkins and Watson lit up that Pats defense. Go to Carolina at home. Losing 33-30. Cam Newton, Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, they lit up. Christian McCaffrey, they lit up the Patriots defense. But Brady, that was early in the season. It didn't matter now. Well, fast forward to December. What did we see then when they played Pittsburgh? Even though Antonio Brown got hurt early in that game, Ben Roethlisberger was throwing all over the field against the Patriots. Now, it is... a problem, obviously, that the Pats allowed the Eagles in the end zone with the regularity they did yesterday. But we can't act like this is a surprise. Okay? This defense had its issues all season against good offenses, against good dynamic offenses. And that's what the Eagles have. The Eagles presented three running backs yesterday, all with different styles that gave the Patriots problems. They brought in a speed wide receiver, a possession wide receiver who's a big play guy also, like Alshon Jeffrey. They also brought to the table a quarterback that was insanely accurate and could stretch the pocket and get the pocket moving horizontally. They brought all that to the table yesterday. And that's why the Patriots had problems. They've had problems with those kind of offenses all season. Stephen A. Smith was talking on First Take today about the Patriots defense and his thoughts. So, Aaron, give us Stephen A. Smith number two.
Obviously, Doug Peterson did a hell of a job, had a lot of guts, but more importantly, he kept his foot on the pedal all night long. He kept going for it. He went for it on fourth down twice, I believe, in the first quarter, if not the first half. So I'm looking at it from that perspective, and I'm giving credit where credit is due, but I also have to attach a strong level of culpability to the New England Patriots defense, because the bottom line is that they really didn't show up at all, and that was surprising. They bend a lot, but they usually don't break. But you talk about a team that picked the wrong time to just take a night off. It was last night.
I don't know that they took a night off. This is just who the Patriots are. Defensively, this is just who the Patriots were this season. The offense for Philly had the success that we predicted all week last week on Radio Row. I told you that from Monday through Thursday night, I was convinced in my mind I was going to pick the Eagles to win. It was not until I woke up on Friday that I changed my pick to the Patriots. I felt there was real chance for success with this Eagles offense, and that's exactly what happened. Don't be surprised. When the Patriots defense played a good offense, this is what they were all season. Buffalo's not a good offense. Them holding Buffalo to 3 and 6 points or whatever does nothing for me. Them holding the Jets to 17 and 6 does nothing for me. Those offense are one-dimensional or no-dimensional. In Buffalo, all they can do is run. Whether it's with McCoy or Tyrod Taylor, they're a run-based offense. The Jets had nothing. They had a quarterback in Josh McCown that wouldn't make a ton of mistakes, but that was it. They couldn't beat you vertically. They couldn't beat you intermediately. They didn't run all that well. Oakland was supposed to be dynamic, and they ended up regressing to the point they had to fire their offensive coordinator in the midseason. Jacksonville's not dynamic. They played pretty well, but they're not that dynamic. And I'm not going to sit here and say the Patriots' success was a product of their schedule, but their defensive success is in part a product of their schedule. When they played Kansas City, Carolina, Houston, and Pittsburgh, four teams that they really did not play particularly well against on defense. And even when they beat New Orleans in week two of the season, that was the Saints team that did not know that Adrian Peterson was not a good fit for its backfield, and they did not know that Alvin Kamara is the guy that they should build their offensive around. Had they played the Saints in December rather than September, we could have been talking about the same kind of shredding happening when they played New Orleans. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We're here until 7 o'clock at the Shelburne Tap House. 250 Bud Light Aluminums and Montreal Steak Poutine on special for tonight. But they've got specials every night, including Taco Tuesday. They've got Wine Down Wednesday. All kinds of things going on. So big group of about 10 just walked in, so we appreciate you guys coming in as well. Yes, hello, everybody. So another thing that's going to be a takeaway from the Super Bowl is this. The NFL is always, we always hear, it's a copycat league. The NFL is a copycat league. The NFL is going to become a copycat league once again in a way that we've never really seen before. And what do I mean? I think NFL teams are really going to place a premium on backup quarterbacks. With all of the injuries that and all the attrition that went through this season, especially at the quarterback position, teams are going to invest in their backups. You saw the success of Nick Foles. You saw the success of Case Keenum in Minnesota. And you saw the also on the other side, the lack of success in Green Bay after Aaron Rodgers got hurt. After Aaron Rodgers got hurt, the Packers were done, and they really, really struggled. The Vikings continued to play well, and the Eagles continued to play well. So what does that mean? Well, you're going to see some guys who have experience, who you might not even think are that good, probably get some good money. In the same way that baseball has now become a relief pitcher-driven league, and you know, in some ways more so than a starter-driven league, you're seeing relievers get money. You're going to see some mid-level quarterbacks get some real money to just be present on a roster. You're going to see that. You might also see quarterbacks taken in the draft by teams that don't really need them. Okay, you might see the Seahawks take a quarterback in the third or fourth round. They don't need him. They got Russell Wilson, yeah? We need a capable backup that is more than just a filler on this roster. Be very aware of how the draft works. I am fascinated to see exactly what is going to happen in the NFL draft. Who is going to take quarterbacks that doesn't really need them just because they've seen how important having that capable backup is in Minnesota and with the champion Philadelphia Eagles? Expect that to be a trend as we move into free agency and as we move in to into the offseason here and the NFL draft. And speaking of the NFL draft, As it comes either the tail end of this week or start of next week, maybe a mixture of the two, we're going to have a number of NFL draft prospects on this show. And when I was out at Radio Row, I had a chance to catch up with a number of draft prospects. And, you know, we talked a lot about what they're doing to get ready for the draft, why they chose the colleges they went to. And we're also going to talk with Jordan Palmer. Jordan Palmer is he's Carson Palmer's brother, number one. He played in the NFL also for a bunch of years, and he is now the guy training Sam Darnold at USC, and he's also the guy training Josh Allen at Wyoming as they get ready for the draft. So we're going to talk with him. We talked with him and 4 to 5 draft prospects at Radio Row, and they're not timely interviews going into the Super Bowl, but once Super Bowl is over, and which it is, we're going to play those interviews back for you, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. So you have a lot of quarterbacks coming out this year from big schools like Darnold, and Rosen. You've got small school guys with big potential like Allen. You've got other guys like Chase Litton at Marshall and Logan Woodside at Toledo. You've got guys that have accomplished huge things at college that are going to be capable players in the NFL. I think you're going to see a lot of teams buying into the need for a really, really strong backup quarterback. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Another thing about the league being a copycat league that I think you have a real chance at seeing also is the Eagles proved last night what I have been waiting for the Patriots to prove all year. And what I mean is this. All year long, Arnie said, if you have 3 or 4 running backs, you don't have one. And I said, uh-uh. I love everything the Patriots have. They had a power guy in Mike Gillisley. They had a power speed guy who could catch passes in Rex Burkhead. They had a power speed guy that could catch passes in Deion Lewis and was a little faster. And then they had James White who could catch passes out of the backfield and kind of stretch the field laterally and go on the perimeter. I loved everything the Patriots had, and they had a couple of games where they put it together with the run game in the perfect way. They didn't put it together last night. The Eagles did. And the Eagles proved why having a group of hybrid backs or having backs with defined roles and defined versatility and flexibility is going to be important. You have LeGarrette Blount, the bruiser. You have Jay Ajayi, the bruiser. And you also have, you know, Ajayi, a bruiser also with some speed to get out. And then you got Clement, who can catch passes in the backfield, 4 catches for 100 yards yesterday, and, you know, and gives you that dynamic out of the backfield. The multi-running back system is something that works. Look, we'd all love to have one back like Ezekiel Elliott that can do everything. But here's the reality. That's not feasible really all that much anymore. If you're one back dependent, and then that back gets hurt or that back gets old, then your offense is left sputtering. Look what happened to Russell Wilson in Seattle when Marshawn Lynch left. That's what happened. Marshawn Lynch is gone. They're still trying to figure out what to do with their run game. They don't have one. Russell Wilson led that team in rushing this year because they were so dependent on what Marshawn Lynch could do that now 2 years removed from him, they don't know what to do. What happened to the Cowboys and what happened to Dak Prescott when Ezekiel Elliott was gone? Well, they tanked and they end up not making the playoffs a year after going 13-3 and getting a top 2 seed in the NFC. Look what happened to the Falcons this year. Devonta Freeman missed a couple games. They didn't have that dynamic. They don't play as well. I think you're going to see more and more teams have the ability and have the desire, rather, to get a staple of backs that all have different skill sets that can really just make you unpredictable on offense. That's the one criticism I've had of the Patriots this year and of Josh McDaniels, because I think he did a great job. I think he did a phenomenal job play calling and scheming nearly all the year. The one thing I didn't like was the use of the running backs. It just never felt like it got to the level that I wanted to see. Mike Gillisley was a non-factor this year outside of week 1 when he had 3 touchdowns. Rex Burkhead fought through some injuries. They didn't give him the ball enough, even up to yesterday. And James White missed a few games. It just never felt like the running back room was whole and utilized the way that it could be. The Eagles did exactly last night what I wanted to see the Patriots do all year. All right, when we come back, we'll finish out the show. Final segment, we'll remind you of the specials here at the Shelburne Tap House. And do the Patriots owe Malcolm Butler anything heading into last night? And what are we saying is the biggest reason for the Pats' loss? All that and more next. Champlain Valley Game Night, live from the Shelburne Tap House, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on a Monday. Post-Super Bowl, the NFL season, it's over, and it begins anew in 213 days. We are live again here at the Shelburne Tap House, Route 7, in Shelburne, on Shelburne Road, rather. Come on, hang out. Look, specials are going on every day. Must Be Monday is right now. $5 off Montreal Steak Poutine. The steak is phenomenal. Taco Tuesday, also $5 margaritas, $5 tacos. Wine Down Wednesday. Thursday is Thirsty Thursday. 50-cent chicken thighs, not wings, thighs. Friday is It's Finally Friday. Fish and chips and fiddlehead drafts. Switchback Saturday, and then Sunday fun day, Bloody Marys, mimosas, and half off all nachos. So this is the place you want to be. As I said, it's my first time here, and I will definitely be coming back. I think Jess and I have a new date spot here. So looking forward to being here, and the people have been great to us, and the crowd is filing in here for dinner. And as I said, I can attest to it, everybody. The dinner is great. I recommend the poutine. As far as where I want some help on this on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Where are you placing the most blame for this Patriots loss? There's a lot of culprits. There's a lot of possibilities for where you are saying that the Patriots lost. Look, you could point to the rush defense, which allowed 150-plus yards. You could blame it on the officiating for the missed call on what I think was the Corey Clement touchdown. You could blame it on Brandon Cook's injury. You could blame it on the kicking game where Gostkowski missed an extra point and a field goal. You could blame it on third down defense where the Eagles went 10 of 16. But I'm blaming it on the Patriots playing unpatriot-like. And I know that statement, the Patriots playing unpatriot-like, I know what that, it encompasses a lot of those previous things that I said, but really, all I heard last week in Minnesota talking to experts and talking to former players was the Patriots aren't going to beat themselves. And while by and large I think the Eagles deserve the credit for winning, I wholeheartedly believe that they do, the Patriots did beat themselves last night in some ways. In some aspects of the game, the Patriots beat themselves, and they played unpatriot-like football. Tom Brady throwing behind receivers early, throwing just short of a, I want to say it was Chris Hogan to start the, you know, the final drive in the fourth quarter with 58 seconds left. The Patriots with the uncharacteristic special teams gaffes, the failed reverse where it was Deion Lewis on the kick trying to flip it to Rex Burkhead, the failed extra point, the failed 26-yard field goal. Those things where the Patriots, you just don't expect that to be issues. You expect the Patriots to be perfect or close to perfect in all aspects of the game. That's what they have built themselves on. And then unpatriot-like with the Malcolm Butler situation, because one of two things happened. Either Malcolm Butler was a knucklehead right before the Super Bowl, and we have heard the rumors that he was caught with marijuana. We've heard the rumors he missed curfew. If that's the case, those are the things you don't see from the Patriots. Malcolm Butler being a knucklehead is not something you see from New England. If that's not the case, and if Malcolm Butler caused no problems and Bill Belichick just benched him purely for football reasons, then rarely do you see a miscalculation of that magnitude out of a Bill Belichick team. One of two things happened. Malcolm Butler was a knucklehead, and that we don't see, or Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia misgame planned and misschemed, which we almost never see. And we never see it on the biggest stage. One of those two things happened, and neither of which is Patriot-like. So what are you placing the biggest blame on this team? And again, I know he's not used to catching passes, but Tom Brady dropping a wide open pass, that's not, you know, those are chunk plays, gadget plays that usually the Patriots hit on. And look, maybe it was Brady dropping the pass, maybe it was Amendola putting the pass just a little bit beyond his reach, but they have connected on that same play before. And they didn't connect on it this time. I think that that is interesting. I think it's unpatriotic. Like, David is on the Town Fair Tire text line. He gets in. David from Rouse's Point, New York. He goes, it has to be the utter lack of defensive presence, zero. Well, David, let's remember, the defense is connected on a string. The real problem wasn't so much, wasn't entirely the secondary, because Bademosi and Rowe, those guys are getting the brunt of the criticism, and it's mainly attached to the fact that Malcolm Butler didn't play, and people want to say, well, look at what his replacements did. They were horrible. When you get no sacks and generate no pressure on Nick Foles, that's going to cause your secondary to struggle. The longer you have to be in coverage and the more vertical receivers can get, then the more issue your secondary is going to have. So let's not forget that the defensive line that got no pressure, whether it was Trey Flowers, Kyle Van Noy at the linebacker spot, anybody, they did not get pressure on Nick Foles, and that is where, really, that's the root of your problems. Everything happens up front, and the Patriots got dominated in the trenches on the defensive side of the ball. All right, real quick, one last thing. Do the Pats owe Malcolm Butler anything? People have said, hey, Super Bowl hero, how could you do him like that? That doesn't matter to me much. What matters to me is I'm a big fan, or a big believer in, you got to fly with who got you there. And Malcolm Butler, even though he was up and down this year, he was still the 48th ranked defensive back in the league, according to Pro Football Focus. And the Patriots did give up on him. And he's right. If Malcolm Butler did nothing, if he did nothing wrong, then the Patriots, well, they didn't owe him anything because of his lineage and history. They should have ridden with who got him there. If Butler was a knucklehead, then he should have been deactivated. And by deactivating him, you open up a roster spot for somebody else who was going to be useful to you. So no matter how you slice it, the Malcolm Butler thing was handled wrong. He messed up, or Belichick messed up in keeping him active with no intent to play him. That's my feelings on that. Wow. Super Bowl Monday. Again, 213 days until the kickoff of the 2018 NFL season. It is truck day in Boston. Patriots lose. The trucks are headed to Fort Myers. Spring training is just over 1 week away. They'll be there on Valentine's Day on the 14th of February. The Olympics start this week. So football's over. We've got plenty to talk about. The NBA, the Red Hot Bruins, UVM basketball, all of that will take center stage as we start to wind down officially what was an eventful 2017 NFL season. For the last time, congratulations to the Eagles. Always next year to the Pats. Thank you to the people at Shelburne Tap House. Thank you to Rich and Arnie, who are here from 4 to 6. Thank you to graduate and employee Aaron back in the studio for all your work as well. We'll see you tomorrow back in studio. The Huddle, Tom Caron will join us, and in Champlain Valley Game Night, we'll be in the Cat's Den talking all things UVM athletics. We'll see you tomorrow back from our Colchester studios right here on 101.3 ESPN.